Hey, the Buddha's words on loving kindness. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born. May all beings be happy. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outward and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
So, when we come to practice, what are we practicing? Practice makes perfect. So if we don't practice, how are we ever going to get good at something? So if we don't even know what we're doing, it's very hard to practice it. So that's why it's mindfulness is really what we're developing. Because until we have mindfulness, then we can't be with our meditation object. Or we can't, you know, when the mind's agitated or when it's angry, we can't overcome these states. So these things invade the mind and remain. And, you know, it's like if you're ready to throttle somebody and you're filled with anger, you know, most people at that moment you know, they haven't done the work to overcome anger beforehand. So we have this like rainy day training. You know, you don't wait till your house is burnt down to decide to get some insurance or have some savings. Because all that work you did would be for nothing. And so with our practice, you know, whether we do a little or a lot, it's just about starting wherever we're at. Doesn't matter, you know, we can't, just as somebody else can't eat for us, you know, as much as you want to wish, nobody else can eat for us. And so we can't practice, somebody else can't practice for us either. So it's like the teachers, like the Buddha and the enlightened beings, they just point the way. So, and then you get the other people who, you know, they just do a little bit of practice, and then they want to go tell everybody else that they should practice. And, you know, that's like going to a restaurant and getting the menu and reading it many times, nibbling on one piece of food, and then telling everybody else they should go to that restaurant. But you haven't even tasted the food yet. So, and this is all just pointing back to defilements have many subtle levels to them, you know. But if we just look at our own minds and see, well, this is, you know, what is the essence of the practice? The essence of the practice is having a wholesome mind. Because until we commit to developing wholesome states, then, or seeing the danger in unwholesome states, then we're not going to want to do the practice. And, you know, some people come into life with, you know, many good properties, and other people come into life with much more difficult properties. But, you know, the level of practice is open to everybody, even people who've done terrible things. And so that's the problem with things like vengeance and self-righteousness and these kind of things, because you're putting people in a box. Even if, you know, they killed their mother and father and blew a city up with an atomic bomb, maybe they could become a better person in the later part of their life. You know, so if we have this anger towards other people, then we're limiting them. So what we do is, so this is where the idea of equanimity comes up. So if we can help somebody, then we do so with metta or compassion, or we have appreciation for their good actions. Because if you're thinking of all the good things that person's ever done, it's very hard to be angry at them at the same time. And the old one I had once is, I was getting annoyed with where a monk would hang his towel. You know, so even you become a monk, it's amazing how your defilements come up. And so in my mind, I'm like, oh, this is terrible. Why is he putting his towel there? You know, of all the places, why has he put it there? And so every day I'd come out and I'd have this thought. I'm like, okay, well, he's a good person. He's done these things. And then so my job was to think 10 wholesome thoughts. And by the time I got to 7 or something, I couldn't be angry anymore. I don't know if I was a towel maker or something in a previous life, but me and towels is a bit of an issue there. And but when we have these kind of pet things in our mind, you know, they're unique to us. So they just tell us that, oh, okay, there's a problem then. Because if we always make out that, oh, you know, if that monk put that towel somewhere else, then my life would be happy, you know, is that really going to be the answer? You know, is that going to solve all your problems? Or, you know, my husband and wife, if they do this, then I'll be happy. You know, if the politicians do this, then I'll be happy. You know, is that really going to solve anything? And so then when we start to see that actually it's our own minds that's creating a suffering, it's not the actions of other beings. Because even if people do bad things to us, we can choose to have kindness to them. And then even if they're doing something atrocious, then while we wish them kindness, maybe at that moment we can only hold equanimity. And equanimity just means that we're looking on. So we're looking on, but we're not reacting. Because if we don't react to something that bad that's happening to us, then we're not agitating our mind. And because if you look at pain, for example, when you have pain, we've just created a habit of reacting to pain. And so a lot of what pain is mental pain. It's the pain, you get the physical pain that arises, and then you get the thousand thoughts in the moment that say, I don't want that pain. And so this happens through all of our experience. So it's the mind that is the problem. It's the proliferation that is the problem. And also, we've created these train tracks that go way out into the desert. And you know, we want to be back at the station. We want peace now. And so we say, okay, I'm going to meditate because I want peace. But the reality is we've got to work with our minds as they are. So when I started practice, I said, well, it's better to have 10,000 wholesome thoughts than one unwholesome thought. That was my idea. Meaning that any time we catch our mind in the day, that's the moment we can train ourselves. And some days, you know, when we start training, it's difficult. And that's why I say, if we have, I mean, ultimately we want mindfulness from the moment we open our eyes to the moment we lose consciousness going to sleep. You know, and then, and even when you go to sleep, before you go to sleep, we can set up our mind, you know, now's the time for sleep. No, I plan to wake up at this time and let go. And never go to sleep with anything on your mind. You know? So if we treat every day as if it's our last, then that means we don't go to bed with problems. Because what's the point of having anxiety? What's the point of having anger? What's the point of these things? And then they're just going to mean we have a bad sleep. We go into our dreams and we wake up and we've taken that into our next day. But, of course, this is the rainy day training. So this is why we meditate and we come to quiet places, go to monasteries, go to forests, go to temples, go to churches, or any place you find where there's quiet. And you sit down and meditate and be peaceful. Because when we get peace, that's half the work. So our minds are already settled down. But what the meditation and the mindfulness does is it allows us to sustain that peace. And the analogy I usually have is like when we're learning to meditate, when we're learning mindfulness, and as we're cultivating wisdom, it's like we're trying to learn to be the eye of the storm. You know, because when we're in the eye of the storm, there's no trouble. Everything's fairly relaxed. There's craziness going on around us, but we're not involved. And then, but the ultimate goal is to be like a Himalayan mountain where the rains pour, lightning strikes, and it's unmoved. And then so, but what happens though when we start to practice is we attach to the results. So we're like, oh, but you know, that was a terrible meditation because it wasn't peaceful at all. And so there's a tendency to judge. And so that's why when I was saying last week, it's like the attitude of an apprentice. You know, doesn't matter how terrible we are, you know, how good or how bad we are, but it's our attitude that's important. Because if we're doing our best, and maybe our best is only 5% that day, you know? But just the fact that we sat down, we did our meditation, we were mindful, but sometimes things bypass all our filters and they enter our mind. No matter what we do, we're meditating and we're reacting, and we're meditating and we're reacting. And so the first thing to do is just expect that, you know. Whether out of 10 meditations we have one of peace or 9 of peace, doesn't matter, you know. And the way when I learned is that even if you had 2 minutes of peace in your 20-minute meditation, that was a good meditation. You know, even if you're holding onto your seat for dear life, or you looked at the clock 10 times. You know, because you still sat there. At that time, you weren't getting angry. You know, you weren't going off doing other things. You were trying to be peaceful. But then as we learn the skill, and even the Buddha before he left to become a monk, said his mind didn't leap towards renunciation. Because, you know, what is the world consumed with? Sense pleasures. Pleasures of sight, pleasures of sounds, pleasures of smells, pleasures of taste, pleasures of touch. This is what obsesses people's minds. You know, we'll go on holiday, we'll watch television, we'll go out to a theatre, we'll, you know, have a relationship, go out for a nice meal, and all the attention goes into those things. But, you know, when we die, can we take any of those things with us? And so the idea is that, you know, what was our mind like 10 years ago? What's our mind like now? So this is our gauge, because if we're moving on a path of peace, if we're moving wanting to gain in wisdom, then, you know, the culture of our mind is the important thing, you know? And some people's practice may be chaotic, and other people's practice is a very simple and one meditation object. And so we have to look what works for us. Like, the result is my mind getting more peaceful? Is there more wholesome states? You know, like, I, over the years, I use notebooks because my memory is very good if I actually learn to remember something. But, you know, in this world, our memories, we don't use them very much, you know. And so we become reliant on technology and books and things. And so I do the same. Over the years, I'll write notebooks, little things, and then reduce them. And I have this process. And the good thing about that is, after a meditation, maybe I write down a little skillful means or something. And then a year or two later, when I'm having a difficult time meditating, or a week difficult, or whatever, because it can come out of nowhere, and I just go back, and immediately I can take one of those tools, and they're useful. And so when I very first started meditation, I went a bit gung-ho, and I meditated half an hour every day for 30 days. And then that fell apart. But what I did, was I had a little time. I set up an area next to my bed on the other side of the bed where I didn't walk. So I had like a quiet area, and that was just for meditation. I set up a little shrine and had a little zazu cushion and an air purifier, and made it really comfortable. And then I thought, well, if I wake up in the morning, you know, that's like the time before my neighbors wake up and everything, so it's a quiet time. And like, particularly if you're a parent or something, like before your children wake up and after they go to sleep, because then you're not going to stress about them. But for everyone, even though it may be difficult to wake up early, waking up early is so quiet at that time. Because most people stay up late, you know, a few people wake up early. And then so even though you're in suburbia or something, you can actually, you know, get some peaceful meditation. And so I did that, but then after that I did half an hour of journaling, because I thought, well, this is the time where my mind's going to be best every day, so this is the opportunity to make use of my mind. So I had like a spiritual journal. And so, you know, a lot of Buddhists, and then when I used to go to teachers, I would write notes and record them. And so the point is that you've got to use whatever your particular traits are. You know, we all have our own traits. We all have our own things that work for us. And then the other one is having like a recorded, some recorded meditations on an MP3 player. So when I became a monk, when I went to a monastery, I'd never actually meditated that much. And then I went to a monastery for a 2-week holiday and then put my name down and they let me stay. So then I was in a monastery. And so it's one thing you don't want to do. It's good. Yes, we want to meditate enough, a lot, but we don't want to force it so that we build aversion to our meditation. You know? So what I did was get a little MP3 player. So don't use your phones because they have so many other volitions attached to them. We get a little MP3 player and then put a few guided meditations on it. And then that's just used for when you sit down. So anytime you don't feel like meditating, I had like a body relaxation meditation, half hour metta meditation, and a half hour breath meditation, which started with body sweeping and then breath. And then so anytime I really didn't feel like meditating, at least I had a meditation. And I just use the same ones because your mind's like a train track. So you find one that you like, you don't have to listen to a different one every week. You know, your mind actually likes familiarity. Because you're training your mind, it's just done that 20 times, it starts to know what to do. And this is what we call preliminaries. So when I teach meditation, all I'm really trying to give you is some preliminaries. Because we all have to eventually develop our own preliminaries. Like, how do we sit down to relax ourselves, to become awake, to become alert, to have an easeful heart, so then we can be with our meditation object. Because when we have the ease, the peace, and the luminosity, then we're really developing mindfulness. And the more we can do that, begin with it's just trips. But you know that your meditation is getting powerful when the mind starts to stop. Like you're doing your meditation and you just come, just might stop, just like you're dipping underwater and coming back up to the surface. You know, so that's like in Buddhism called Kanika Samadhi. So that's like a very preliminary stage of concentration. So it's unique to developing meditation. And so this is like our preliminary goal. We just keep practicing until we have enough preliminaries that we know how to get the mind on the path to stillness, to peace. Because most of us can't think about some high, noble, spiritual truth for half an hour. You know, we might start thinking for 2 minutes, and then we start thinking about what we're going to cook for dinner and who we spoke to yesterday. And so the purpose of the concentration, the like calm, steady state of mind, is that with that peace that we build, then we can have sustained focus, and it's built on peace. And so then we can contemplate spiritual truths, and we can have a joyful heart, and we can overcome our defilements when we see them. And so this is like the fruits of the meditation and the mindfulness. So, and then another nice one before going to bed, as I said last week, is you just reflect on your actions. You know, like, what good have I done today? You know, what good thoughts have I had today? What good speech have I had today? What good actions have I had today? Have I been generous? Have I had respect? Have I been thankful? You know, have I been gentle and patient? And or what areas do need improvement? And because that's us being our own parent, being a parent to the mind. And because if we don't have some way of training ourselves, then how are we going to culture a good mind? Yeah. So, and then the very simplest one is whenever you're really noticing you're stuck in bad trains of thought, just ask, what kind of mind state is this right now? Is it a good mind state or a bad mind state? And then when your mind keeps trying to go down that train, just ask the question again and again, and the mind will slow down, because then you have mindfulness of your bad mental state. So the two can't coexist. So it's just a way of slowing down. And that's a very simple trick, like the training of the mind. And it is one of the factors. So if we can't yet get to mindfulness of the body, and the reason we have mindfulness of the body, so whether that's mindfulness of the breath body, mindfulness of the body posture, or any other form of mindfulness of the body, because they're coarse things, the things that are easy to be mindful of. But until we have any mindfulness, we can't even be aware of coarse things. So sometimes we need to use our wisdom, you know, to catch our mind. And the mind's like a slippery fish. You can't easily catch hold of it. Or like the wind, you know, we know the wind is there, but we only know the wind is there because we see its contact on things. And so the mind's like that. Yeah. And the one that came up when I was down south was the mind is like a fish thrashing in shallow water. That means the untrained mind. So you know, we're all going to have difficulty training the mind, because it's like trying to train a wild animal. The wild animal doesn't want to be tied to a post. So when we do our meditation, when we do our mindfulness, we're tying it to a post. So maybe we only remember to tie it to a post for 15 seconds a few times a day to begin with, or for a minute a few times a day. And then we have our meditation. That's a formal way that we're consciously watching our mind. So it's an opportunity to be more observant of our mind. Because when we're more observant, and it's easy to know, oh, now I'm not meditating at all. I've just been thinking about something else for 10 minutes or whatever it is. And so the formal posture of meditation is very important. And then also, if nothing works, then just reflecting on our good actions, reflecting on moments of peace, moments of generosity, moments of kindness, you know, because you can't be angry and restless if you have wholesome qualities in your mind. So we actively develop wholesome qualities. And in Buddhism, we have like the recollections as well. And so the idea is when you have inspiration in your mind, then the body will become peaceful on its own. And when the body is peaceful, the mind will become joyful. And when the mind is joyful, then the mind will come to... So joy in the body, and joy in the body leads to joy in the mind, and then joy in the mind leads to samadhi. And so all we're developing in meditation is samadhi. So the idea is that there's different ways of getting our mind wholesome. So however we do it, that's why we talk about practice all day. Because every moment of concentration is another moment purify our minds, to let go of the bad stuff, the crap, and to develop the good stuff, to find that essence, that taste of what it means to have a pure mind. And it's just a purity that is blameless, that comes from peace. And so when we start to taste that, we go, well, this is better than all of those sense pleasures, and all those things that come from the world, you know, aren't even a 16th part of this experience. And then that's when we start to see the benefit of meditation and the benefit of practice. But to just accept where we're at. And obviously, so another thing, the Buddha, there's an ancient tradition, which is also in Buddhism. Buddhism arises out of ancient laws as well, like natural laws of the universe. It's called the moon observance day. So when you look at the moon cycle, you can look up the Thai moon calendar, and then you have like a half moon, full moon, a half new moon, new moon. So you have 4 days in a month, basically. So they were days that people used to go to the monasteries, or a day where they would focus on practice. So unlike now, these days we have 2 days a weekend. So they would have their work day, and then they would have one day where they were spiritual, and they would go, that day you would focus more on being quiet, and going to the monastery if you were a spiritual practitioner. And the benefit of that means that even if we get lost for a few days in our life, then we have a day to remind us to practice. And a whole day is a good period of time. So, you know, maybe start with an hour on a day, and then 2 hours. And you know, it's not much in the West, but if you go to Thailand and other countries, you know, they actually even have moon observances where they try and sit up all night and meditate on those days. And the lay people come along as well. So that's just to give you an understanding that, you know, from wherever our practice is, whether we're meditating 5 minutes a day, an hour a day, or we have mindfulness practices through the day. And then another good thing is just to have a day a week, or, you know, a moon observance day or something. And that's a day where we make sure we really focus on the mind. And so it's just a kind of a useful aid to help redirect our lives in the correct direction. So on that day, you know, don't watch television, you know, don't read books, don't go out to restaurants, just have a day where you're focused on quiet things. And that would be the idea of them. So anyway, it's already half an hour. So we can do a guided meditation. Allowing everything to settle down. Just as the rain falls to the ground, just allow all the thoughts and moods and feelings to fall away. Don't have to get involved with any of them. Just using our intuition to adjust and relax our body. Bring a kind and gentle attitude into the mind. So all the formations of our body is becoming relaxed. Our eyes are becoming relaxed. Whole organ of the eyes. Just check that the posture is good for the meditation. Balance. Sense of inner uprightness. At ease. Just remember the attitude being like an apprentice. There's no judgment. Just a willingness to try is good enough. A willingness to be interested. The body relaxed, the eyes relaxed. See if there's any lingering tension, maybe in the shoulders, the upper back, the knees, the neck, the face. Whatever area is most prominent, just really relax. And then spread that feeling of relaxation through the whole body and the whole experience. Balancing our mind with a wise heart. Now's the time, if we have a meditation object, we can bring it up. Just let my voice be background noise and stay with your meditation. I'll give a brief guided meditation. Help set up the preliminaries for anybody else. Just see the tendency of the mind to want to go outside, just to go out into the world, into the hindrances. we're feeling tired, just try to wake up. If we're feeling agitated, just try to calm down. We just bring ourselves to the neutral position, a place of high and sensitive balance. Become aware of in-breath coming in. In-breath is the present moment. Out-breath going out. Out-breath is the present moment. We try to fix our attention at a place that is comfortable, so it's easy for the heart to become still. Just content with the simple sensations of the in-breath and the out. A joyful sense of encouragement, just to be with the in-breath, just to be with the out-breath, just this much, fewness of desires, fewness of wishes, fewness of wants. Sense of gratitude to be here right now, just with the in-breath, just with the out-breath. In-breath is the present, out-breath is the present. What's the sensations, the feeling, the temperature, the texture? Length. formations of the breath, its creation, its development, its cessation, whole breath awareness, just of an in-breath, just of an out-breath. The light heart, free from any burdens. Start inclining the mind towards peace and tranquility. Bringing a fullness to the breath. As the rain falls down, letting everything else fall away. I'll be silent now for the next 10-15 minutes. Just do our best to balance our faculties and be a good apprentice. Just before we finish, we'll just go through a few things. Just with the eyes closed, see how the mind is, how the body is. What's the mental state right now? Has our mind calmed down? Are we more settled than before we began? If things were difficult, did we have a bit of peace? And so we have to find the means of seeing the benefit of meditation, so we can train our mind and become skillful from meditation to meditation. We'll just take a few moments to do a mudita contemplation. Mudita is appreciative joy. So we just wish ourselves appreciative joy. May we celebrate in our own wholesome actions, good actions of thought, good actions of speech, good actions of the body. As we sow, so we reap, which is the law of karma. When we celebrate in our good actions, we know that there will be good results to those actions. This is an example of a good action, taking time to be peaceful and quiet. As we celebrate, we also have a balanced heart. Mudita is both joy, like a happy mind, an easeful mind that rests in peace, that rests in equanimity. And we share this joy and this equanimity with all beings in this room, with all beings on this property, the insects and animals, the tree devas, any beings seen or unseen that may be here. All beings in Perth, Australia and the world. All beings everywhere. Boundless wish of mudita, of appreciative joy, resting in equanimity to all beings in the ambrosia, seen and unseen, lofty and low, near and far, as all beings, so ourselves. In our own time, we may end the meditation and take this mindfulness, peacefulness and ease into our lives. Now let us chant the verses of sharing and aspiration. Through the goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest powers and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life. May they soon attain the threefold bliss and realize the deathless. Through the goodness that arises from my practice, And through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease, and all harmful states of mind, until I realize Nibbana. In every kind of birth, may I have an upright mind, with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge, unsurpassed is the protection of the Dhamma. The solitary Buddha is my noble lord, the Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and delusion be dispelled.
Sadhu.
Yata varivaha pura pare parenti sagarang evang eva itodinang petanang upakapati chitang patitang tumphang kipameva samijatu sabeparentu sangapa chando panaraso yata manijotiraso yata sabityo vivajantu sabarogo vina satu mate pavan tuan tarayo suki tika yuko pavahabhivadana sili sanichang uta pachayino chataro dhamma vatanti ayuvano sukhang. Thank you all for coming.